Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen. I'm a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and I'm pleased to be joined this evening by another Jen, a very committed, longtime person in the Sangha, joining us from the other coast. Welcome, Jen.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me. It's such
a pleasure.
Jen, yeah.
Jen's the author of a really fabulous new book called Bring On the Joy. And the little title line is How to Unleash the Power of Joy in Your Life. So, Jen, I wondered first if you could tell us just a little bit about the book.
Yeah, absolutely. It basically, you know, I was kind of giggling about this as I was thinking about being here tonight, that I think if I had written it, like, you know, only for people in this practice, I could have actually called it, like, if you're listening to conditioning, here's a bunch of really fun and effective stuff to do to disidentify.
So funny. I knew you were going to say that. That's actually my experience of the book. It's fabulous. It's just you can't stay identified if you actually do the steps that you lay out in the exercises.
Well, good. I'm very glad to hear that. That's certainly been my hope. So that's what it is. It's tips and stories and tools and techniques and just outrageously fun stuff that, you know, if you find yourself listening to conditioning and kind of in one of those places, it's designed to support you and uplift you and help you really turn your attention from conditioning to joy.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any favorites? Because the way the book is laid out, it's like, I don't know, exercises isn't quite the word. What would you call them?
Yeah, maybe exercises, maybe, I don't know, just really fun practices, things to do, yeah, whatever feels right, yeah.
So you don't have to sit down and read the whole book. You just get sort of each page or couple pages is its own activity, if you will, its own sort of little thing to try out, and really, really fun, and I just wondered if you have any favorites or any that come to mind as an example.
Yeah, well, I think they're all such a blast, but there are a bunch, but, you know, a couple, one of my favorites is that there's a little section on avoiding fake relaxation, so, you know, all the ways that conditioning would say we could relax, like, you know, numb out in front of the television or whatever, and that one is a way that conditioning gets me a lot, and it's really fun and helpful to look at that section because it just encourages us to say, wait a second, what is truly relaxing, kind of snap back into what would actually be really fun and really enjoyable to do. So it gives some suggestions and some brainstorming to find out what those ways are for you so you don't end up in the fake relaxation world, which is, you know, the track to conditioning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it reminds me, actually, it's funny, of last week's Good News Update, the taking care. And that it was a topic we talked about around the holidays, of actually spurred on by a call into the radio show, of where someone was talking about, you know, conditioning talks me into, quote, taking care of myself, which is AKA going unconscious. And yet what your book talks about is ways that you can truly take care of yourself, things that actually nurture the being and, you know, lift our spirits and bring us into the present moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the ones, I can't remember what the whole context is, but it's, can I give one away? Do you think that would be okay?
Of course, yes, please.
you lay out this part about going to the mirror and looking at yourself, you know, looking at this person and saying, you rock. And my favorite part was how you say, no, that's okay, I can wait. You know, you as the author are kind of really encouraging people because it would be so easy to sit and read the book, right, sitting in a chair and get talked out of actually doing what the book is asking you to do. And
yeah.
The participating, I find, is the whole key, I mean, to everything it is. And we talk about it in practice all the time. And so I love how you say in there, no, no, really, do it. I can wait. I'll just hang on here while you go do that. And I just had so much fun doing it. And it was funny, at the end of a workshop recently that I had done, a woman was thanking me at the end, and she said, you rock. And I thought, I want to read Jen's book.
Oh, that's great. Yes,
yeah.
I think it's a severe problem in the world. We need to say you rock to one another and ourselves much more often. So.
Yeah.
That's
really
great.
Fun. It kind of brings new life into the you know, thank you. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah, it's just, it brings a whole new energy to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, then, what kind of spurred you to write the book, would you say? Where did that
come? Well, yeah, I would say practice, really, you know, giving me, you know, that's so much support and foundation to reconnect. I mean, probably maybe many folks have something similar, but, you know, kind of a sub-personality who always wanted to write and share something with the world, but, you know, conditioning thought that was a really bad idea. And I love, you know, Sherry's always telling us, or at least what I hear is, you know, go out there and just do more and more outrageous stuff to push up against your conditioning. And writing a book was pretty outrageous to my conditioning. And so it just felt like, I think that was so helpful. I just felt so incredibly grateful for practice that this could even kind of come through me. I mean, it felt like that, like my job was just to not listen to conditioning so that life could come through. It wasn't me in some ways, you know, but so that was really amazing. But I think that the thing that helped me to be able to actually write it was practice and kind of knowing. I really came from a place of, this is just a practice opportunity. It doesn't matter, you know, if no one ever reads this and they think it is like the worst book on the planet, you know, I don't care, because I'm really proud of myself for just going up against the conditioning that tells me that I can't do this.
Yeah, well, wow, that's amazing. And what I project creates such an inspired product, because, you know, if it is all about the book and how the book turns out and whether it's a good book, then the attention is on conditioning. And when it's not, when it's about the process, when it's just about, hey, I'm doing this because it's my spiritual practice and I want to follow the guidance to go up against what the voices say I can't do and do this thing, then the attention is in the present moment. And I love that image of, you know, my job is not even really to write the book. My job is to do my practice so that conditioning doesn't write the book, and then that lets life write the book.
Yeah, that was how it felt very much. And, you know, without a doubt, it's practice that made that available. And I had a little recording, a couple kind of main recordings to just remind me, like, this is, you know, it's not about whatever. This is just a practice opportunity and, you know, all that kind of stuff to just remind myself of what I really wanted for this person, for the heart, for the person that was really excited to just share this and not have to get shut down by conditioning.
Yeah, you know, as you're talking, it's amazing to think, I don't know quite how to say it, but how much practice has done through all of us. So, you know, practice, we hear all the time from people what an impact practice has in our individual lives and what a difference it has made, you know, for each one of us. And then to look at, expand that out and what practice has offered through us. So in this case, a book that who knows how many people will read it and what impact it will have on their lives.
Yeah, it's really an amazing gift. It feels humbling to just kind of realize again, like, it's not me. It's just, you know, if I can just do the practice, you know, who knows what amazing things can come through each of us if we just don't listen to conditioning. I feel so grateful to get to play with that process.
Yeah, exactly. And how just each of us practicing in every moment, the joy that we bring to ourselves and to really everyone we come in contact with, and the possibility we're modeling for each other. I mean, so you know, just person going around living her life, have this aspiration to write a book, and how many people have aspirations like that will never come to pass because the voices talk them out of it, and then you just do it. You just set out and do it, and what that models for everyone around you. Wow, huh? Maybe this is possible. It's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah, I just think as a sangha, collectively, you know, what we've offered, what life offers through us, is really pretty extraordinary.
It's amazing. I'm just kind of shocked and in awe and in gratitude a lot when I just look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Jen, if people wanted to find your book, how would they do that?
Yeah, they can go to a website called bringonthejoynow.com, and they could see it there. And probably helpful to share that a portion of the proceeds of the book go to the Africa Project.
I think that's very important to share.
Yeah, like, that seems important.
Yeah, and I happen to know that it's already two children, I believe.
It is.
From the sale of the book. So
there we go.
I mean, the impact, you know, so there's the practice impact, and then there's the actual everyday children are eating and going to school, and their lives have opportunity that would have never come to pass because the proceeds from the book are going to support the program. So, wow, I don't know, how many wins can you have? Win, 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 win.
Yeah, and that's so helpful even now, you know, if I'll get kind of conditioning will be talking to me about, you know, I don't know, getting the book out there in the world or whatever. It's so helpful to remember, you know, no, I really don't want to indulge that. I mean, of course, for me, but it is helpful that place of, you know, for other people, I can think about the kids. Like, if I can get, you know, more of these books out into the world, then it's going to share joy and more kids can be sponsored. And, you know, it's just so fun and really helps. It helps me to have a good motivation to drop the conditioning.
Yes, exactly. So in those times where for whatever reason we can't muster it just for me, then that we will do for the love of others what we would not be willing to do for ourselves, that Sherry often quotes her teacher saying, comes into play, doesn't it? And so here are these children in Africa who you've actually seen because you've been to Zambia, so you know them personally, and you really realize what a huge difference this makes in our lives, and that can kind of bring the extra oomph that you might need on a given day to really get out there and do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So bringonthejoynow.com is where they could find it.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. Well, Jen, thank you so much for being on with us, and thank you for the book.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for practice.
Exactly. Thank you to us all. Thanks, Jen. Good night.
Take care. Good night. Have a great show.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So, Michael, before I turn the show over to you, I know you're probably going to do your standard encouraging people to keep the calls short.
Yes.
To 5 minutes or so. And then another one, poor callers, all these folks who call in week after week after week and say, oh, I never get on. And so short of we're looking into cloning Sherry Huber, but we haven't pulled that off yet. So our next best strategy is to look at possibly, you know, if you've called already in the last few weeks or so, maybe hold off, you know, and see about giving other people a chance. Not actually, though, to make it a rule. So, you know, if you've called in recently and there's something else you really want to check back in about or that sort of thing, not to make it a rule, but just something to consider because we're looking for creative ways to get as many folks on the show as we can.
Yes. Can I reflect that?
Yes, please.
So we're going to try and keep our conversation short and to one topic. And if you've called in the last few weeks, maybe wait a while before calling back in. And, of course, not to make a rule about anything.
Exactly. That's a much better way to say it. Don't make a rule about anything because we know who would hold rules, really.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. All right, Michael. Thanks so much. Have a great show.
Okay. Thank you, Jen.
Good night.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. Before we go on to anything else, I would just like to point out that on that last little bit, we had two Jens, both of whom rock.
Yes.
Isn't that a good thing?
Two Jens who rock.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing before we go on to something else, which I know we need to do, but I have rekindled, or my passion for Sangha Market has been rekindled, and I, in the next little while, plan to turn a huge amount of attention and awareness to it, because it occurs to me that we need to have books like that, the Simply Celebrate book, these kinds of things that Sangha has been doing out of their own practice and that have, as Jens were saying, has great potential for bringing a great deal of conscious compassion awareness into the world and also do great things by supporting practice and kids in Africa and that sort of thing. we need to have a place where people can go to our website and be able to find those things. So when they track us down, they also have access to all of these other kinds of support. So, yes, go to bringonthejoynow.com, and in future we're going to let people know that this is how you can find all of this via the Living Compassion website and Sangha Market and that sort of thing.
Great. Kind of the win-win-win that they were
talking about. Oh, just winning all the way around.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the things that I'm fond of pointing out whenever I get a chance is that Sangha Market originally was conceived as a way to do that win-win thing. The economy had just gone through its downturn and people were really struggling financially, and of course, when people struggle financially, it's hard to support other things, because it can come down to a choice of, you know, do I pay my bills or do I donate to something like Living Compassion? And so we thought of this project as a way to support people in their own life. So, you know, if you sell something on Sangha Market, a percentage of it goes to Living Compassion, yes, and whatever percentage you decide, over 20%, can go to you. So it really is a powerful tool in itself, and we're going to be turning a lot more attention to it so that people more people can benefit.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I would love it if Jen could have said, oh, well, go to Sangha Market, and, you know, then it's just very easy, and one more way that, you know, she doesn't have to try to get the book out in the world. We're going to be helping get the book out
yes.
into the world.
Yes. Yes.
That's my spiel on that. Thank you very much.
Great. Great interconnectedness.
Hmm?
Okay. A real connection among all aspects of Sangha and how that manifests in each of us.
Yes. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Just that network of support growing and strengthening.
Yes. 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 And part of the way that's strengthening is your events.
Oh, nice segue.
Nice.
Very well done.
Thank you. You will be at Crystal Way Bookstore in San Francisco, and that's on Friday, February 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. And then you'll be at East Bay Open Circle in Berkeley on Sunday, March 20th at 7 p.m. At the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, that's at the end of May, May 27th to 30th. Then you'll be at Esalen, June 10th to 12th. That's a weekend workshop, spirituality and business. And then at the monastery in the middle.
Well,
of the...
may I?
Go ahead, please.
We also have great hope, big plans, that I'll be in London on June the 18th.
Wow.
So that is definitely in the works, and people listening from that part of the world, keep in touch.
Work up your ears. Yeah.
And then at the monastery.
And then at the monastery in the middle of July, July 16th to 23rd, you'll be leading a retreat, Not What But How.
The foundation of our practice.
Foundation.
Five processes that are the basics of our practice.
Do you want to say what those are?
Well, how about if you say what those are?
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot. Beliefs and assumptions.
Uh-huh.
Aspects of the personality.
Uh-huh.
Projection.
Uh-huh.
Disidentification.
Mm.
And centering.
Yes. So it's one of those where even if people feel like they're grounded in the practice, having an in-depth look at those five processes can be very, very helpful.
Yes. 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 Wonderful.
Mm.
I think we're ready for our callers.
Right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janet from New Hampshire.
Hey, Janet.
Hi. I'm really going to try to keep this to 5 minutes, because I was thinking if we all did 5 minutes, you would get through everybody. And wouldn't that be quite amazing?
Yes, we hope that would be the case. So, yes,
Okay, here I go.
All
first
right.
of all, I have Jen's book. It's fabulous.
Oh, good.
It That's really rocks. I love it. I love it. So
good.
Big plug for the book.
Good.
I have a situation where there is a woman that I work with that I've been having trouble with, whereas I feel like she bullies me, and she bullies the other two people I work with. And so I've been trying to work with it, knowing that everything's projection. And what I keep coming up with is that there is some part in me that just, it doesn't want to let her off the hook. There's some part of me that really
wants to get her and punish her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I look at that, it's like, wow, that is some part of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that does
that.
Who
would only bully as retaliation, never initiate it.
Is that being facetious?
No. No, it's one of those perfect places where we get to, you know, if we follow the steps along, we get to see ourselves in that other person. We get to see where the projection comes from.
Okay, so can you say that one more time?
Yeah.
Because
so
I get really stupid around the stupid dust.
So, you know, you treat me in a hateful way.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me want to treat you in a hateful way.
Okay, yes.
So it's easy for me, if I'm paying attention, to see where the label hateful comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm the one who's framing it that way. And the reason that I can believe it's not me or I'm not like that is that I only go to that place in reaction.
All right, okay.
It's only if you do it first, then I do it. But I'm not the kind of person who would do it first.
Right, but if you do it first, I will do it.
I'll take you out, Bud. Yeah, yeah. So that's just good to see right there, isn't it?
Well, that is good to see, and somebody wants to know, then what?
Well, I'll tell you my favorite thing about this. I've said this actually to a lot of people, and only one person that I know of took me up on it. And I will tell you that in that situation, it had a profound transformative result.
Okay.
And so here it is. You, in your mind, begin to see this woman as a comedian.
Okay.
She's always joking.
Okay.
Everything she says is a joke. Now, if you stop and try to figure out the joke, then you may conclude that she's actually not joking.
Okay.
So what you do is, in your mind, just take everything she says as a joke.
So I never go to that place where I am, quote, unquote, she's being hateful.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
She's not. I mean, she might have kind of a strident one of those kinds of caustic sense of humor, you know, and she delivers her lines in a really deadpan way. But, but she's still a comedian. These are all being delivered for laughs.
Okay.
So you know that Voltaire quote, I think it's Voltaire, God is a comedian playing to an audience afraid to laugh?
No, I haven't heard that.
Okay, well, there you go. So if we looked at life as kind of a big improv performance set up for our entertainment,
mm-hmm.
and nothing really ever happened to anybody,
yes.
Yeah, because it's all a big stage play?
Yes.
Yeah. Then we would be having probably a lot better time than a lot of folks are having most of the time.
Well, you know, I'm going to try that out.
Good.
Because that sounds great, and I'm going to tell the two women I work with also. So I think they'll go along with it.
Yes, because if the three of you can be the audience,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's one of those where if you've ever been to something like that with friends, it's much funnier because you're laughing together. You're enjoying
yes.
it together.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yeah, just give it a shot and see.
I will. Thank you so much. And that was 5 minutes.
Woohoo!
Thanks, goodbye. Janet. Thank
Bye.
You. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janet. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Virginia.
Hey, Virginia.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to call and give you a report on something that we talked about over the New Year's.
Uh-huh.
We had talked about my mom and some feelings I had toward her or some resentment I had going on. And let's see, during the retreat, I had recorded into my recorder a kind of a forgiveness exercise that was directed at myself. And kind of just the gist of it was just acknowledging that I didn't really have a lot of the skills at times in my life that were needed to do certain things or to, you know,
be the person you wish you had been able to be in that moment.
Precisely. And a curious thing happened because when I went home and I was listening to the recording, it's like the first time I listened to it away from the retreat, it was like I knew it was me, but it was like really clear. It was my mom as well. It was both of us. It covered both of us. And but I got that, and like, I mean, I just, it was kind of a whole body experience, you know. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, although it wasn't intended for her, it got partly to her. And
well,
so
and if
yes.
I may,
mm-hmm.
that's always the case, and that's the power
yes.
of doing the work in that order. So when
yeah.
when you get to that place of compassion for yourself.
Yeah.
Then
oh, yeah.
It's much easier to extend it to other people. What we're
yeah.
taught is that you should do all of this with your mother, and
uh-huh.
if you don't, there's proof that you're the wrong person, and it really simply perpetuates and deepens the suffering, the issue, the problem.
Right. We're taught that we should just do it with that person, right?
Yeah. And leave you out, as if you didn't suffer in the situation as well. So when you get
mm-hmm.
to that place of compassion for yourself, where you realize, wow, you know, everybody's having the same experience,
right?
Then
yeah.
we no longer want to keep that separation and that distance.
Yeah, exactly, and that's really how it felt, and especially the separation and the distance kind of going away. And so I've talked with my mom a few times since I've been back. And, you know, the last time I spoke with her, it was really interesting, Sherry, because we talked about the same kind of content we always talk about. But there was like a softness in the conversation that I haven't really noticed before. And anyway, I got off the phone, and it was apparent to me that, well, two things. One is, I guess, that, you know, I felt expansive and a lot of energy and just, you know, kind of that glowing feeling. And it was interesting because I guess what I got, too, was how such a story is ginned up for me about, like, the whole idea of love or anything on that kind of soft side is, but conditioning up until now has told me that that's like not, it's not something that you want to like devote a lot of attention to or don't even talk about it. You know what I mean? Like it's not like an option for you or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that's what.
Is there an element of it's dangerous? You let your guard down or you know, you'll be vulnerable or any of that? Or it's just not for for you?
I guess hearing you say that, I would have to say that that sounds familiar. Yeah, it feels familiar. I don't know that I get the exact words, but that sounds like the, yeah, yeah.
You got to keep her at a distance because she's dangerous.
Right.
She, you know, she hurt you all those times. She's going to do it again if you give her a chance, and so you just got to keep her at a distance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And not just with her, but, of course, it's all over. It's it's like not being allowed to have that experience.
Yeah.
If
the experience we get to have instead isn't actually worse than taking a chance of being injured again in real time.
Right, yeah.
So I'll stay in suffering all the time as a way of avoiding the possibility of suffering once in a while.
Right. I love how you put things.
Well, when we say it out loud, it's pretty silly. But again, it when it's inside our head, it just somehow makes total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, because there's no break from it. There's no...
no distance.
No distance, yeah. So
that's
an
irony, isn't it? We're meant to keep a distance from everything else, but have no distance at all from that hateful system in our heads.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both, and in this instance with this content, it's like double whammy, the distance, you know, that kind of closeness would create. Yeah, yeah.
So have you thought about writing her a letter?
Oh, no, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, I'm kind of blissing on it right now, but I had not occurred to me. What are you suggesting?
Well, that it could be a great way to express not the specifics of the change in you, but just the outcome of the change in you. You know, maybe a letter to let her know how grateful you are for all that she did, all that she's given you. And, you know, so often what conditioning wants us to do, of course, is focus only on everything bad and wrong that ever happened in a relationship. And just cling to that, replay that over and over and over and over and over. And when we drop it, as you have dropped it, then what's available to us is all of the other information that was hidden behind that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so to express some of that to her would be a lovely thing for both of you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Thanks, Sherry. I am making plans to go visit in April, but I hadn't thought about the letter, and I think that's a wonderful, beautiful
letter
idea.
Letter ahead of time might be a nice introduction for the visit.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of...
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Deb from New Jersey.
Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How's it going?
Good. I think a few weeks ago I had what seemed like a discovery, but the past couple weeks, the more I thought about it, the more the shine wore off. So I thought,
oh, can I say I already know the problem?
Okay. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, never think.
Well, and that ties in with what my discovery was. What I was looking at was more run-of-the-mill thoughts, because conditioning's MO with me is more like a benign kind of babbling. You know, just kind of like, oh, that's a good song. Or on my listening buddy's call, I said, you know, if I'm on the subway and I go, oh, I like those shoes. Those are good shoes. And, you know, and just kind of flitting around, not really, you know, I'm not present, but I'm not really in that hateful place either.
Mm-hmm.
And then I concluded, you know, are all thoughts conditioning?
Hmm. And?
Well, it seemed like that kind of flitting around, babbling stuff, because it's not being, I'm not present. I mean, maybe there's a part of me, a sub, that likes those shoes. But, you know, it seems distracting from the here and now at the same time.
Well, now, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you're not present?
Well, I'm not sure.
Because you're aware that there's a conversation going on about the shoes.
Well, yes.
And it's not actually a conversation, is it? It just kind of pops up that, well, those are cute shoes. I like those shoes.
Well, then it can also go, that guy's a jerk.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like coming to conclusions about things, but just flitting around. And I may just say, I don't know if that guy's a jerk or not, and move on.
Uh-huh.
It kind of flits around like that. I was on retreat with you in Connecticut, and I told you, like, we were looking at a wall that had molding, and I got very, oh, well, this is good molding. I really, you know, and I went off on this thing about molding and how interesting it can make a room. And that's basically where my thoughts go.
Uh-huh. And so have you noticed, are you aware of the difference between a thought arising and the conversation?
Yeah.
So you described two of them, right? One is, oh, that molding. Oh, molding is interesting. Wow, that's beautiful molding.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes a conversation when it's molding can just make such a difference in a room. You know, really bad molding can just take what could be a beautiful room and turn it into a disaster in just a minute.
So is that first thought about the molding or the shoes, is that conditioning trying to hook me?
Well,
kind of ego asserting an opinion about something?
Well, now that is going to be your assignment, to begin to get a sense of that level of subtlety.
Well, that's what hit me a few weeks ago, thinking that all these thoughts are just, they're a way to keep, this is what I thought, that it's a way to keep conditioning kind of at bay, because it's got me, you know, kind of has me paying attention to some things, but it's kind of like a gateway drug into a story, like I'm story ready.
Uh-huh.
Or
yeah.
Something like that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And I think what you're closing in on is really interesting and important. So, you know, the molding thing, we could say it's conditioning in the sense that if you were living, say, in a slum in Zambia, it would never occur to you to think about molding.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's conditioned in that sense that it is, it's a part of the world that you live in that you're aware of and that you would be taking in and processing information about and going over in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that still feels different, I think, from the conversation that goes on. So to me, what you're wondering about, and the part that's really important and interesting, is that just kind of thoughts arising like clouds in a sky, that image that goes on, is mm-hmm. that a way that conditioning fools you into a conversation? So by the time
like
your
it
attention...
Is. It seems like it. That's how it gets me.
Uh-huh. Well, is that how it gets you? Because we wouldn't want you to go down the road of trying to stop thoughts from arising, right?
Well, they're just going to pop up anyway.
That's right. And so the issue, perhaps, is when attention goes with one and you lose sight of it. So it's
right.
kind of a look over there, and then while you're not looking over there, attention gets hijacked and
mm-hmm.
goes into a conversation.
Okay, so the thoughts arise, and that's it. They're just going to. It's what happens right after that when I might trail off.
Yes. So that's the place that I'm hoping you'll start attending. How do you how do you go from a thought simply arising, or, you know, content arising in the mind, we could say,
mm-hmm.
to the ownership conversation that karmic conditioning gets going?
Notice when it takes over.
Yeah. And mostly to notice where is the problem. Now, where does it become a problem? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I think I do.
So where does that process turn into a gateway drug?
It seems, I mean, I'll look at this, but it seems like when the story gets, it revs up, it gets bigger.
It's compelling, doesn't it?
Compelling. Like the shoe thing. I might say, oh, those are good shoes. I wonder where I could get those shoes. You know, I can never find any good shoes. I can't believe I can't find shoes like that.
And, you know, shoes are so expensive now.
Right.
If you're going to get anything that's decent at all, it's going to pay a fortune.
Right.
Now, why? Yeah.
Right. Okay. So there's like there's a line.
Don't you think?
Yeah, because I was, I mean, at one point I'm thinking, God, if all thoughts are conditioning, that's wow. You know, but really, thoughts are going to, yeah, the thoughts will arise, and then I just go, okay, now we're back here, you know.
Uh-huh. Now we're back here watching everything as it arises.
Right.
Hey, you're going to let me know what you see, right?
Oh, yeah, I have thousands of things that flip through my head constantly. So it'll be, you know, it'll be easy to watch it because this just hit me that this is true. Because I've been saying, oh, my God, I'm all over the place. And after I realized this, I had a lot of really hardcore hateful stories come up, hateful dreams. Some really, really intense things came up after that. I saw through all of them. They were really easy to see because they were so intense. But this is more on a daily basis what conditioning does with me.
Yeah, and of course, as we both suspect, that whole episode was designed to put you back in the box.
And not call about it because
yeah.
it seems, well, it's kind of dumb. You're just going to tell somebody you like, you're going to call her and tell her you like, you know, you like someone's shoes. You know, but that's really where my, you know, the thoughts go.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
No big deal thing.
And you're not supposed to be looking at this level.
Right.
Yeah. You're supposed to just stay unconscious everything is flitting around. You get hooked. You go down a road of suffering, and then you get told what's wrong with you for doing that, and then it all repeats.
Yeah.
Not supposed to be examining it, scrutinizing it at this level.
Right.
Right. Your assignment.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Excellent. Thank you. Good night.
Great. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Deb. You're listening to Open Air. Jerry, we have another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry. It's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, Todd.
Hey.
What's going on?
Just coming off a great at-home working meditation retreat day on Saturday.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Did you shovel some snow by any chance?
Well, it's funny you mention that. We're in a Chinook, so it's like 45 Fahrenheit and from minus 30 last week.
Wow. So you're out there
in
your
great
swimming trunks, right?
Right, yeah. Everything's melting and there's like water everywhere and it's quite fun.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. So it was
much
a good at-home retreat.
Yes, it was a really great at-home retreat. And it was just seeing how supportive the schedule is.
Uh-huh.
And watching how conditioning has talked me out of a lot of structure that I so much appreciate at the monastery and during the at-home retreats.
We need structure, don't we?
Don't we need structure? Ego has a great campaign about making things really, kind of wishy-washy and...
No. It's not wishy-washy. You want to be loose and flexible and relaxed and...
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a whole ball of suffering in that.
Yeah.
And I got to be nicely with the at-home retreat with a nice schedule and following it and... just seeing how the structure supports awareness?
Yes.
Yeah. That was good to see.
Yeah, and once we see that, the good news, of course, about seeing that is then we realize how important it is to have it everywhere in our lives.
Yes.
And, of course, I would also suggest that it's really important for us to have times when that is not the case. You know, where you spend a day just, going for a long hike or lying in your lounge chair in the backyard or whatever it is. But times that where you're not doing anything other than being present to just being where you are with nothing taking you anywhere else.
I like that. Yeah. Because I can see then conditioning taking over the schedule and making it all a bunch of shoulds, and then
then
you're just it's like being in oppression. It's like there's nowhere to move.
Exactly.
Right. So like at the monastery, in the sense that there's holy leisure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't know about you, but early on in practice, I had some of my most miserable times with holy leisure.
Uh-huh.
Because there's this amount of time with nothing scheduled.
Yes.
And what do I want to do?
Right.
And, of course, I want to do 100 things. How do I pick one? What if I pick the wrong one?
Yes. Right, because in monastic practice, my experience of it is, 95% of your time is filled from, sun up to sundown with structured activities that support awareness practice.
Yes.
And then you come to the last day of the week, and that last half of that day, you're right, you've got 6 or 8 hours that you basically, ego's got a lot of opinions about that time. Because it's campaigning all week. Oh, I can't believe we've got this, and there's a group, and then there's, and it. So it's grumbling all week how structured it is.
Right.
And then when you get the unstructure, it goes crazy, and then you're right. I saw that. Very much during monastic practice that, I could see that, oh, my goodness, now what do I do?
Yeah.
because it does have 100% wants to do, and then it starts to, you know, evaluate them. Well, this is better than that, or you know, or I'm missing out on this, or I can't do that on a Wednesday at noon because we're doing this.
Yeah. And
very
so,
fun.
Of course, as we're pointing out, all of it simply another way, another vantage point from which to view what egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is attempting to do to us all the time.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Good.
Yeah, because it's making agreements with our hearts and then keeping those agreements and seeing how conditioning wants to talk us out of it. And if we get talked out of it, see how that happens. And
yeah, and also with the flexibility we were talking about, you know, I have a plan to X.
Yeah.
And then it just does, that's not, seem life isn't going there. Something happens,
yeah.
And conditioning then wants to go into a big thing about, well, you said you were going to whatever it is, and that's not it either. It's
no.
Having a schedule, as you say, that supports the heart,
yeah.
And life then can provide for us the flexibility in our very scheduled lives.
Yeah, exactly. And even at the monastery, we'll look up and there'll be a schedule change because life presented the monastery with a situation that requires flexibility.
Yes. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everybody is doing something totally different that was previously scheduled. And that worked, too.
Yes.
Because in that change, we got to see how ego is causing us to suffer, so we can go ahead and drop that story.
Yes.
Like, oh, you know, we normally do this at this time. We're not doing it better.
Yeah.
Which is normally the grumbling.
Right.
And it didn't want to do it in the first place, but now that we're not doing it, now it's really, you know, ramped up.
Yes.
You know, the minute you take away a sitting meditation, it goes, oh, we're supposed to be sitting. Well, it never wants to sit.
Right.
But it sure loves to complain about it when you don't get to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, no sitting today at 5:30. Oh, and then ego comes in with,
ah. Big loss.
Yeah,
there.
Huge loss to ego.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. So
yeah,
that's all I'm looking at. Very fun.
Yeah, good. So you recommend those at-home meditation days?
I wish I could have them weekly.
Yeah.
Highly recommend them. I would sign up every Saturday if they were offered.
Oh, wow. That is a good recommendation.
Yes. Excellent. Good encouragement. I love
great.
Them to death.
Great.
It's like being at the monastery at home for me.
Yeah, and you get to do your own work, right? So
yeah.
I hear people say that. You know, I come to the monastery, I'm doing working meditation. God, I've got work at home I need to be. Well, there you go. Something
there
for everybody.
Something for everybody. My blinds and windows have never been cleaner.
Ooh.
Letting in the sunshine for the spring.
For the 45
degrees. Very great. Win-win-win, as we talked about in a good news update. Win-win-win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Sherry. Thank you, Michael. We'll talk soon.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and Stop, Drop, and Breathe, and then we'll be back.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy. All to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael.
Hey.
It's Lakota.
Hi.
Hey, Lakota.
Hi. Oh, I'm so happy to get on the show. I didn't expect you, but I guess that five-minute thing works.
What's going on in your world?
All kinds of stuff. I also participated in the at-home working meditation retreat and absolutely loved it. I had just this, I mean, it was, I'd done it before, and this last experience, it just felt like it deepened.
Mm.
And it felt like there was so much gentleness and so much kindness in the whole day, just moving slowly with gentle reminders here and there to, you know, it's not about getting things done. It's just about being here and being present and spending some quality time just here with this wonderful person.
Yeah.
And gosh, it was a great day.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, that's another one of those interesting and important points. Conditioning so wants us to believe that what you're doing makes the difference. But what we get is when you spend quality time with a kind person, that's and all time spent with a kind person is quality time. That's as good as life gets. It'll never be any better than that.
Yeah. And I had this very real experience of that, and there was just this awareness while I was in the experience of. There was that joy that could not be improved upon.
Uh-huh. Lakota, you sound very far away all of a sudden.
Uh-oh.
There
okay.
you go. There you are. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, better. Yeah. So that joy.
That joy. And, yeah. And I just had so much gratitude for it and really appreciated it. And it was interesting to notice that the backlash that happened afterwards. It took a couple of days because the next day after the retreat, there was just this wonderful, I mean, having experienced that joy, that I just wanted to continue and just spent the whole next day almost kind of doing the same thing. Just
uh-huh.
Day two, because it was so good. I didn't want to stop. And
uh-huh.
It was so lovely.
Yeah.
And day three, I had to get up and go to work at my regular job. And suddenly, it felt like just kind of out of the blue, there was just this intense, really heavy kind of like sadness or like kind of a feeling of depression or something that was just like, whoa,
mm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
there's that, you know, and I mean, there was the typical things that were coming up, like the conditioned response to that is like, oh, this is awful. This feeling means there's something wrong. I got to get rid of it. Blah, 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 blah. And there was kind of miraculously this willingness to have a little different approach and step back and say, what if this feeling doesn't mean there's anything wrong? What if there's very little conversation? I just put my hand on my body where I was feeling the feeling. And
mm-hmm.
was with the breath and just kind of stops that scrambling to get away from it.
Uh-huh.
And it changed instantly.
Yes.
So which is wild. But I've been noticing though that coming up over and over and just I don't know, any kind of like guidance on how to continue to maintain that kind relationship when there's such a habit to push it away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and of course, the thing that I love so much about that experience that you had is proving it to ourselves that what keeps something in place is trying to get away from it. That when you turn around and just welcome it in, give it all of your attention, the whole thing just kind of falls apart. And of course, you know, one of the things that I'm really hoping people are going to just take up more and more and more is, you know, we were talking with Todd about the schedule, and of course that's part of what happened for you on Saturday, is that breaking up the day into awareness sections, you know, doing things all day long, scheduling in all day long, the moments, the time to stop, to turn your attention, the listen to this, the jot down that, and of course that's the thing people have the hardest time doing because conditioning is so incredibly resistant to it. But if you can bring in those reminders during the day, and practice turning your attention to the kindness each time, I think you'll be able to very quickly take that experience of the working meditation day into your regular life.
Thank you. That sounds right on.
Yeah. And again, you know, conditioning is going to say you can't do that. There's not enough time. People are around. What if somebody sees you? You know, like what if somebody sees you with an earbud in your ear? Yeah. Like in our society, that's just going to really shake people's foundation. So, you know, it is a matter of discipline. And it occurs to me that it might be a nice time to drag out making a change for good and do a 30-day retreat on introducing more awareness reminder breaks into the day focused on kindness. You know, have a 30-day kindness program. Did Lakota go away?
Uh-oh. Sherry.
There you are.
Okay, sorry. No, that is perfect. Thank you so much for that. It occurred to me during the retreat and the day after that, boy, wouldn't it be nice during my week at work to schedule periodic breaks where I could record and listen or just stop, drop, and breathe and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that it was like such a great idea, and then I just didn't do it the last couple days.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's the recording and listening. You know, that can be such a powerful help with that too. You know, just make that date with yourself at night and plan out the next day and how you're going to schedule it. And, you know, it can take 5 minutes to record it. Then you listen to it first thing in the morning and you're set. And, you know, if you get talked out of it, if you don't do it, it's like, oh, okay, well, all right, I got hoodwinked. Good. All right, now, tomorrow, and, you know, and because there's always going to be one of those that we face until there isn't. And so, you know, we make our intention and we go out there and we see what happens. And as we know, if we just stay with the practice, the transformation happens because it can't hold out against our willingness and commitment. It just can't.
Much for the support.
Let me know what happens, okay?
I sure will.
Be my
Thanks,
test. Be my test case.
I will. I will gladly.
All
Thanks.
Right. Thanks. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Lakota. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, we have time for one more caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hey. Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. Good.
What's going on?
Well, I let's see, it was in Connecticut that I spoke with you, and I was, one of the issues that I was looking at was doing. And conditioning, one of its favorite ways to get me to suffer is to tell me that that I'm not enough, that I'm not doing enough, that I need to be doing more. Look at what so-and-so is doing. Look at what I even noticed it came up a little bit at the beginning of the show when I heard about Jen's book, and I noticed that there was, you know, conditioning.
You should write a book.
You, yeah, what is the matter with you? You know, you could do, you should do that, or you
mm-hmm.
should do something at least that much, if not more. And I really had to laugh at it because it was just so obvious. And then there was this other part that came up. The heart just felt joyful about it. You know, seeing, you know, having heard Jen over the years, and I know intimately some of what she's been through, and to see this come out of her is just like, wow, you know, this is really wonderful. So it was interesting to contrast, you know, conditioning with the heart.
Yes.
But in Connecticut, you had said, well, why don't you just become or just practice or just do unconditional love and acceptance all the time. And there, that's something to do.
That's something very good to do.
Yeah, very good to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't realized it completely, but that's really what I've been focused on to a large extent ever since. And it really has worked beautifully. What Lakota was just talking about, that those times when conditioning sees an opening and comes in and tries to create suffering and actually does, or someone inside feels hurt or feels shamed or feels fear, whatever. That's the opportunity to bring in that unconditional love and acceptance. And when you do that, when you actually accept those feelings, accept what's happening, even though conditioning would say that's wrong, that's bad, that means you're a failure, that means it's not working or whatever, you bring in the unconditional love and acceptance and it just dissipates.
Yes. Yes. I actually wrote a blog today, this morning, the first one in a long time, because as I explained in it, you know, when I'm doing an email class, I just have very little left over for writing anything else. I stopped myself because I was trying to keep it to one subject, which I'm not particularly good at. And the next subject that we will talk about this, so I may not have to write a blog about it, but it is that notion that we are making all of this up. You know, it's we talk about that periodically. Other people talk about it periodically, you know, that all of this is made up. And when we understand projection, we really begin to get it, that everybody is living in a universe of one. Each person is making up their own reality and then living in it as if it's true anywhere other than in their own mind.
Mm.
Yeah? So conditioning, of course, gloms onto whatever reality people inhabit, whatever they're projecting. So then, you know, you can't do this and you have to do that and this means that and that means that and if you don't this, then that. And to just step back, even for a split second, and go, you know, there's no truth to any of that. It's all completely made up.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, at least for me, helpful. And I referred to this earlier with the molding. You know, I like to look at, well, what if I lived 2 centuries ago in China? How many of the issues that I look at on a daily basis would be issues for me? Do you know? So
yeah.
The whole
yeah.
social structure that I'd be living in, what I should be doing, who I should be, who is important, who's not, what that means, it would all be completely different. All the content would be completely
different. Yeah, but the
different.
Process that we bring to it is, you know, is the practice.
Yeah. So if we get it that it's all made up, then to me, it's such an open invitation to make up something that I like better.
Yeah. Yeah, and live there. Yeah.
And live there. So I don't need to entertain those voices. They're made up. They're irrelevant. And so I don't need to talk to them. In fact,
yeah.
we get a lot of information that says we shouldn't talk to voices in our heads. Little joke.
Yeah. Well, that time is up, and I just wanted to say thank you so much.
Yeah.
This
so,
is such a wonderful practice, and
yeah.
I really have been getting the feeling lately that it's that the energy of practice is so enhanced by all of us doing it together.
Yes.
It's just wonderful.
I agree. And so a little homework.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever, you know, length of time you can remember to do this, when you hear a voice start up, just say, I'm not talking to you because you're imaginary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to answer that because you're imaginary. I'm not going to speak to that. You're an imaginary voice. See what happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Then let me know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, George.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, George. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. How did I get so lucky, Sherry?
Woo! Don't we have a good job?
We have a great job talking to all these fabulous people.
Yep.
Let's do it again.
As fun as it gets. Let's do it. Let's next Tuesday at around 5 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah, are you free?
I am. Actually, 10 to 5 because there's that good news thing. I don't like
yes.
to miss that.
That is just such a great jump start.
Yep. All right. Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
You. Thank
good
you.
Night.
Good night.